I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Before the advent of cable and streaming services, it was possible to watch the handful of well-made TV shows and have time for the rest of your life. Today, there's a smorgasbord of programs that can satisfy just about any and every taste and leave you hankering for more. Today, we're going to look back on the best TV of the past year and highlight clips chosen by our guests and by me. We want your list of must-watch TV. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email. They're already coming in, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We asked Mark Dowidziak to join us. He's television critic for The Plain Dealer. Mark, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us, Willa Paskin, television critic for Slate and host of the Decoder Ring podcast. Willa, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me as well.
Willa, let me begin with you. How do you, and I want to hear from you, Mark, as well, how do you do your job as a TV critic when there are hundreds of not just TV shows, but many of them very good TV shows? Willa, how do you decide what to watch or how to live a balanced life?
You know, it's not actually as hard as it looks, but I like pretending that it's hard.
Oh, yeah. And I'm jealous.
I think there's so many shows that you can sort of the illusion that you would cover all of them has evaporated. So no one thinks you're going to watch everything. So you really are have more freedom to actually pick what seems interesting or is made by someone interesting or is on an interesting platform or just seems like something you would like. So there's just more cherry picking involved.
What about for you, Mark? How do you cherry pick?
Well, I don't want to make this sound like the night the old nostalgia book burned down, but I started in the Carter administration covering television, you know, went back when we did top 10 lists with Roman numerals.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, but back then, you know, as you were saying, it really was much easier to stay on top of what was, you know, like 1989, two buzz shows. Twin Peaks and Northern Exposure. Stayed up on those, you were up on it. You know, you were up on what everybody was talking about. Now, you know, I mean, on one Friday night, Netflix can carpet bomb you with 15 different choices, and a lot of them good. So you stay by just treading water, basically, is what it's become. And it's not hard. It really isn't because, let's face it, we watch television for a living. You can't make that sound hard.
No.
You can't make that sound bad either.
No.
So, you know, but it is. I think that's right. You focus in on what looks good, and you're going to miss things. You're just going to miss it. My students at Kent State, where I teach, tell me all the time about great ideas and what they're watching and things like that. Oh, really? I got to check that out. And it's invariably illuminating and good, but that's television right now.
Well, let me get your top 10 list, and I realize that's a hard thing to do, but Willa, what was on your list, or what is on your list?
Sure. I actually, this is grouchy, but I didn't actually think this year was super great for television. I mean, I know there was a lot. There was enough stuff to watch, but I didn't think it was I thought it was a little bit weak year. But here's the things that I liked. I really loved Succession, which is HBO's sort of comedy, tragedy, cringe drama about a very rich media dynasty who behaved terribly towards one another. But I thought it was a really great show. And I also really loved Glow, which is Netflix's series about the making of a 80s show about female wrestlers. So it's sort of like a behind the scenes show about people, actresses and other women sort of starring in this wrestling show. It's the second season. The first season was also lovely, but I found the second season to be even better. Just like a show where nothing like that horrible happens. Everyone's basically nice. It's super lovely to be in their company, and yet it's not boring. It's very hard sort of to pull that off, things. And then I guess my third one, which you mentioned already, is Killing Eve, which is, there was a show, Fleabag, on Amazon a year ago or so, made by a British creator called Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who also starred in it. And she created the show Killing Eve, which stars Sandra Oh, and is about a sociopathic psycho killer hit girl who is very funny and charming and totally lacking all values and morals, who sort of becomes caught up in a cat and mouse game with a detective, or not a detective, really, an MI5 agent played by Sandra Oh. And it's it's extremely fun for being about something so grim and horrible, but I think it sort of is intelligent and thoughtful about that. So it's not just like a, you know, getting murdered to pop music escapist trash. It's a little more smarter than that.
In fact, we have some of these clips queued up. If you can just quickly go through your other list and then we'll have a chance to actually digest some of this. What else is on your list, Willa?
You want all of it? Okay, yeah, sure.
Just by name. And then we can deconstruct it.
I also loved Atlanta, which is Donald Glover's show on FX, and this remake of Howard's End, an adaptation of Howard's End that aired on Starz, but it's a British show. I really liked the German series Babylon Berlin, which aired on Netflix. Ugly Delicious, which is David Chang's food show, which also aired on Netflix. This adaptation of John le Carré's novel, The Little Drummer Girl, which aired on AMC. A sort of spy novel, and then High Maintenance, HBO's High Maintenance, and Netflix's Dear White People, two sort of comedies about different things, but very engaging in their ways. And then also Nanette, which was Hannah Gadsby's sort of very buzzy stand-up special that aired on Netflix sort of towards the end of the year, which I had a lot of arguments with, but I thought about more than maybe anything I watched this year.
Oh, that's interesting. What's on your list, Mark? And again, we will deconstruct it as the hour goes along.
Okay, before I say this, let me just say, this is like going out, this is why I do not look at other people's top 10 lists, because it's like going out to dinner and ordering your food, and then you see what the person next to you got, and you want that. Because that's just a comment on how good, you know, why television is right now. The top 10 list can only be representative now. They can't be definitive. They can't be, you know, this really is, I would say, because all of those were terrific choices, and all of those could be on anyone's top 10 list for the year. But my list, and I don't think we've got a duplication.
No, we don't, which is interesting, but go ahead.
Not the year 2020. Mine starts with Billions on Showtime. And I just think Billions has become what I call the Justified of its time. Justified was a show on FX, which never seemed to get awards, never seemed to make top 10 lists, never seemed to be, nobody seemed to be recognizing. You know, and to my money, it was the best show on when it was on. It was not only a good show, it was the best show.
Well, I would agree with you there completely.
Yeah. Billions has grown. It's gotten better each year. They have added to the ensemble. And this year, they made Jeffrey DeMunn a full regular. They added Clancy Brown as a semi-regular. My goodness, what they were doing this year was just dizzying. And there was just no, you know, when it came time for it, did not get one Emmy nomination. Not that the Emmys are the beginning and end of, you know, saying what's great in culture or anything, but Billions, my goodness, it took the top of my head off. Well, I really think they did a great job.
And let me just say, we do have a clip from Billions. If you can just go through your list, Mark, and then we will we'll take them all apart. But go ahead. After Billions comes.
Okay. And my second spot was The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I thought had every bit as good a second season, a sophomore year, as they had a freshman year. And just it is because it's so evocative of that time, of that era. Just a wonderful look at Rachel Brosnahan's character as a stand-up comic. And that came in at the end of the year, the second season, and it was over. It was like, oh. Can't we have the third season now? Third spot was The Americans, which, again, to my money, the worst season of The Americans was the first year when they were finding themselves. And that's often the case with series. They find themselves in the first year, and then they sort of really come into maturity in the second season. And I thought The Americans actually improved every single season, and the ratings went down. It was an inverse of its quality, and it was so frustrating to watch the ratings go down as the quality of that show went up. And few shows, you know, a lot of people talk about the
Mark,
finale.
Mark, I hate to do this to you, only just because I'm watching the clock, we got lots of clips and
right.
more things to talk about. So after The Americans comes.
The Terror. AMC,
okay.
Which was a historical drama mixed with Patrick Melrose on Showtime, Benedict Cumberbatch. Lodge 49 on AMC as
yep.
well. A Very English Scandal on Amazon with Hugh Grant. But Better Call Saul on AMC, mm-hmm. also a little bit under the radar. The Good Place on NBC, my only network show. The Good Place, and then Homecoming with Julia Roberts on Amazon.
Let me go back to something that you said, Willa, and this is also on my list, which is Babylon Berlin, and it's hard to play a clip because it's got German subtitles. But I just wanted to play a song, and I must say that the dance sequences from this program are incredible. The look of it, the drama, the scariness, the characters. This is song sung by, I think it's Severica. Featured in the Netflix series Babylon Berlin. Let's just give it a little listen.
Es ist wohl nur ein Traum, das bloße Haschen nach dem Wind. Wer weiß es schon genau.
Willa, let me go back to you. And it's Berlin. It's 1929. It's between the wars. We obviously know what is happening, what is coming, as Berlin becomes Nazified, if I can put it that way. What did you like about this show?
Well, I thought the beginning of the show was really wonderful. It transports you in this world. It looks beautiful, like all the Art Deco detailing is really amazing. There's this sequence you just played is like, it happens in a club. It's like, it's, you know, the Weimar era. There's all these people actually dancing to this, you know, it's to live music. And it's really, it's like a musical almost in this one sequence. And it was maybe my favorite scene from this entire year. I think the show totally falls apart at the end of the season as it goes on. But for like that very beginning bit where it's sort of about, they're trying to assault this detective and a sort of his girl Friday, who's like she's working at the, you know, where all the detectives work, but she's also sort of working at nightclubs and going to nightclubs and has sort of a very poor, but is very charming. They sort of get together to solve a case that goes all the way to the top.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of momentum, and it's very, all the things that are happening in that era are extremely interesting. It has like this amazing open elevator that I never seen before that sort of like constantly moves like an escalator that has haunted me in a nice way. But, you know, I think that you maybe disagree, but I think that as it sort of went on, it kind of like lost the plot a little bit. But for that very beginning, it's worth it. So maybe watch the first part of that season and then see if you have the momentum to keep going.
Fair enough. And that's Willa Paskin. And she is a television critic for Slate, host of the Decoder Ring podcast. Also with us, Mark Dowiziak. He's a television critic for The Plain Dealer, talking about some of the good TV of this last year. A comment from Dick Pullman, who's been a guest on Radio Times in the past. He said, I dug The Bodyguard, a British miniseries about a guy providing security to the Home Secretary, with terrorist subplots abounding. The current miniseries, Escape to Dannemora, about a true prison breakout, heavy drama directed by Ben Stiller with award-worthy performance by Patricia Arquette. We want to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and we are talking about some of the best TV of 2018, again with Mark Dowiziak, TV critic for The Plain Dealer, Willa Paskin, TV critic for Slate. And Mark, you had mentioned the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, starring Rachel Brosnahan. She is Mrs. Maisel. And here's a scene where she is performing stand-up comedy, and she is roasting the male comics who had preceded her, including a guy named Stan.
All comics are comics because something in their lives went horribly wrong. Something went... Either their hairline, Eugene, or their personal lives, me and Stan. I don't even need to know the details, but looking at Stan, you just want to apologize and tell him everything's going to be okay. Which it won't, because it's Stan. But men, those over there, and men in general, think that they are the only ones who get to use comedy to close up those holes in their soul. They run around telling everyone that women aren't funny, only men are funny. Now think about this. Comedy is fueled by oppression, by the lack of power, by sadness and disappointment, by abandonment and humiliation. Now, who the hell does that describe more than women? Judging by those standards, only women should be funny. And stand.
Well, Mark, there you have it, a scene from Mrs. Maisel. It's on every, I wouldn't say everybody, many people's top 10 lists, or certainly a show to watch this year. I think that captures some of the flavor of the show.
It certainly does, and also her performance. But, you know, obviously impossible to truly get the idea of what Rachel Brosnahan's doing with that character and where she started, which was this idea that she had this perfect life in this perfect world. And, you know, so much comedy, the root of comedy is pain. And so, you know, there's an underlying, not only say darkness, but there is pain right from the start in this. And the way they sort of walk that that parallel and discovering where comedy comes from, and particularly from a woman's point of view in the 1950s. You know, this is a show, unlike Billions, which does get a lot of attention, a lot of awards, and it deserves it. Its challenge was to live up to a brilliant first season, which it did.
Which it did. Let me go back to you, Willa, and you had mentioned Succession. This is about the Roy family, the wealthy patriarch played by Brian Cox and his children, obviously money and power and intrigue. Let me play a scene from this. And here's Tom, played by Matthew McFadyen. He's learned about the severe crimes of his predecessor at a company that owns a cruise line. He's explaining them to his employee, Greg, who's played by Nicholas Braun.
For a number of years, there was an unofficial company policy on the cruise lines that if there was a serious criminal incident, we would have possible sail not home but to a Caribbean or South American port where there were so-called friendly authorities, and we could minimize the incident to avoid negative PR.
Incidents like
theft, sexual assault, rape, murder.
Okay, the bad ones.
Yeah, there's hundreds in there. You know, the head of cruises himself, Lester, would go on these entertainment tours, meeting the dancers, and extending the contracts of the ones that would... Everyone we could, we paid off. We hushed up. There are emails. This correspondence. It's ready to blow. It's a time bomb.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know. Because anyone I ask for advice, I make complicit. If you know about this stuff, you should tell. But you can't because you're going to spread the virus.
So I have the virus, don't I?
Will it remind you of anyone you know?
That's a funny clip because the show does, like, it's very dark in that way, but it's also very funny, like, that basically what happened, and the Matthew McFadyen character in particular is a sort of a whirligig of malevolent but hilarious striving, and so, like, he is a very intense, there's a lot of very intense characters on that show, and you kind of can't tell if you're supposed to be laughing at it or if you're supposed to be, like, horrified at it for a little while until it sort of teaches you how to watch it a little bit, and then...
Then you get to do both.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get to do both.
Well, here's a not unrelated show. And this is, of course, Billions from Showtime. This is it involves a U.S. attorney, Chuck Rhodes, played by Paul Giamatti, versus, I guess, a hedge fund billionaire named Robert Axelrod, played by Damian Lewis. And here's a scene where Ben Kim, played by Daniel K. Isaac, is an employee at X Capital, revealing some of the pertinent information to his bosses, Bobby Axelrod, as I mentioned, played by Damian Lewis, and Mike Wagner, played by David Costable.
I've been tracking rental car usage in business cities, developing relationships with managers there. Based on lots of activity in Milwaukee, I've deduced a big move is going down.
Talk more.
Managers of the main airport locations have confirmed that there are lots of Dutch passports being presented for car rentals.
Holland Enerbev's going after Beer National.
My sources were able to confirm by GPS that all these cars have been going from a Courtyard Marriott 7 miles to...
Beer National's Milwaukee headquarters.
Right. I think there's a merger coming, if not an outright purchase.
And Axe Capital have positions in both companies ready for the write-up on the announcement.
Well, done, Ben Kim. Maybe next time keep your shirt on.
Mark, you had mentioned this earlier. What do you like about Billions?
You know, one of the things is just the writing. You know, it reminds me of almost like it's a throwback to Rod Serling's writing for live television, where you just had this great writing. All of the drama was in the exchanges between the, and then that writing was brought to life by great actors who just seemed to swim in the dialogue, who just are so appreciative of how good and how well written the dialogue is that then they bring home the goods. Scene after scene in Billions is like this. You know, there are two, one on my list, this one and Homecoming with the Julia Roberts show. They're both, to me, feel like older shows in that way. Mm. Back when, in a pre-CGI, pre-special effects, got a show, they allow all of the great big dramatic moments to be two people in a room talking and saying, this can be more dramatic than any explosion you will ever see. And that's what's got me hooked on Billions.
Let me read some comments from some of our listeners. The Handmaid's Tale is the best show I've ever seen, though I can't say I really enjoyed it. I get that. Comment from Kathy. I'm so glad our daughter insisted that we watch American Vandal. So funny. A comment from Mary. My favorite is Sweet Bitter, a show about working in the restaurant business. Will, anything you want to say to our listeners about those comments?
I really liked American Vandal as well. I think it's really funny and clever. It's a sort of spoof of true crime documentaries that's also in itself like a it's not just a spoof that aired on Netflix. It's sort of set in a high school where they sort of try to solve various mysteries that might not be totally great to talk about on air.
I got it.
What they are, but but it's both very funny and it's sort of and sort of pitch perfect. And it goes like about halfway through, you're like, how can this be going on for another five episodes? Like, I get the joke, but then it actually sort of digs deeper and has good. It sort of works as in the way that it's supposed to, like as a kind of as a drama and not just as a comedy. It has a lot of heart.
I watched the first Handmaid's Tale and I just couldn't find the right mood to watch the second Handmaid's Tale. Mark, I don't know if I need to live in this world here, but your thoughts about that?
Oh, I don't think it's that. I think they had an uneven second season.
Okay.
They did not meet that challenge we were talking about with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is trying to live up to a brilliant first season. And I think one reason was they were trying to build on a world in ways that the source material didn't. They were a little off book from what Margaret Atwood had done. And I think you could tell. I think, you know, quite frankly, they were playing without a rule book a little bit this time. And that's not to say they didn't have really brilliant moments and that visually it wasn't as compelling as it was the first time. But I think from a narrative standpoint, they were not as strong.
I feel much better that I didn't do that. That's Mark DeWitziak, and again, TV critic for The Plain Dealer, joining us from Cleveland, and Willa Paskin, TV critic for Slate, also host of the Decoder Ring podcast, joining us from New York City, and again, looking back on the best TV shows of 2018. And again, we want to hear from you what programs you might recommend. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And I have to say, for me, this is really weird because I'm talking about things I know nothing about. I didn't like Billions. I didn't like Succession. I don't like Ray Donovan. I mean, there's certain programs that I don't know if I want to spend that much time with people that I really despise, meaning, of course, the characters. But it's just very strange to do an interview about something I really know very little bit about, including Glow, which is from Netflix. This is season two. And, Will, I know this was on your list, Glow, standing for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Tell us about this program and why you liked it.
Well, firstly, you might like it because it's not about unpleasant
there
people.
There you go. So I just might, yes.
Just saying. Okay. You should give it a shot.
Okay.
It stars Alison Brie and Betty Gilpin as are sort of the leads, and Betty Gilpin in particular is really phenomenal. It's set in the 1980s. There's this plan to make a sort of late cable access kind of show, not quite cable access, but a cable show about lady wrestlers, because male wrestlers are doing so well. So they sort of have this plan to put together this TV show, but it's very like Bad News Bears, sort of everyone's by the seat of their pants, very sort of low budget. And so a bunch of women who can't really get cast in anything else are cast in the show, and they form this sort of fun and interesting community of actresses, and also they're not all actresses of learning how to wrestle, but also the show sort of plays up the like all the reasons they couldn't be cast because they're, you know, because of their race or their age or their weight, and then sort of turns that into their wrestling persona. So it both like plays up and comments on all the stereotypes around them, and is very witty and funny and really charming. And Marc Maron is also in it as like one of the few male characters in it who's the director, this character Sam Silva, who's a big grouch. It's just a really lovely show.
Well, that's a perfect setup for our clip. This is Marc Maron, again playing Sam, the director of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling League, addressing the wrestlers about some of the changes in the organization.
It's not rocket science. Okay, same thing every week. Bunch of promos where you guys talk shit about each other, all right? Then a wrestling match. And then wrestling match. Wrestling match. Another wrestling match. Then a title match. And then a closer where Liberty Bell vows to take the crown back from Welfare Queen.
Every week? What about the other storylines?
Hey, you know what's better than me standing up here answering questions? It's you quietly reading the answers in your new contracts.
Contracts! Get your contracts here!
That is pretty funny, Willa. Let me go back.
Give it a try.
I'll give it a try. Mark, let me go back to you. You mentioned The Americans. Its final season was this year. I do want to play a scene and then we'll talk about it. This is Paige, played by Holly Taylor, confronting her mother, Elizabeth, played by Keri Russell, about how she's been aware of her parents' double life and all the lies that they have told.
Looking back, I've always known, Mom. Every time, every lie. My whole life. And I know now.
I had nothing to do with that boy.
No wonder Dad can't stand to be in the same room with you.
Excuse me?
You lie about everything.
Hey,
how many times? How many men? Were you doing this when I was a baby? You're a whore. Does Dad know he married a whore?
Stop it.
Why? You don't want to know the truth? The truth is that moment you told me who you really are? I should have done what Henry did. Get as far away from you as possible.
That's enough! It doesn't mean anything to me. I wasn't brought up like you were. I had to fight. Always. For everything. People were killed. They died all around me. If I had to give everything so that my country would survive, so that it would never happen again, I would do it gladly. We were proud to do whatever we could. Sex? What was sex? Nobody cared, including your father.
Wow, it's always incredible to hear from that show. Mark, what did you, without giving the ending away, what did you think of the ending of this show?
You know, I've thought about this one a lot because, you know, I just did a symposium in your area at Rowan University on TV finales, and there was a lot of discussion on what makes a great finale. And, you know, I made the point that, you know, we put so much emphasis on the last couple of minutes on finales, like The Sopranos or something like that. It's like, how did it end? How did it end? How a series ends is about the whole last season. It's about how it comes home. And it's not just is the ending brilliant, is the last couple of minutes brilliant. And this had a brilliant entire last season. So this is going to stand as one of the great last seasons. Never mind the ending so much, because people can check that one out for themselves, and you don't want to give anything away. But the whole entire fifth season, to me, was just a powerhouse season, and it came home in such impressive style. And then you got to the last. Yeah. That's where the points in television where you sort of stop and you take your hat off and go, wow, that's impressive.
What about you, Willa? Just curious about your response to The Americans and how it all ended.
I think The Americans is a great show. I found the last season to be very grim in a way that, you know, it's like the show, it always is a tension between sort of like its very dark, morose themes and the fact that it was like sort of a spy show and they could run around and do spy things. And obviously as the show went on, it became more morose and dark, as it should. It had a really dark setup. I sort of found the last season to be good, but to sort of I didn't want to watch it at all. And I did watch it, and I thought the finale was strong. I think like it's a very good show, but I didn't like enjoy its ending quite so much. I think like its best season was probably like around 3 or 4, and then it had to sort of bring home all its chickens had to come home to roost, and they were sad. Chickens. Yeah.
Let me read a comment from.
It's funny. I feel like we've disagreed about. I actually disagree with like every show we've mentioned. That's one of the funny things about TV.
I know. Everyone's got an opinion. Absolutely. My favorite show never gets mentioned. This is from John, who says The Patriot. A comment from Gary. What did your guests think of the second season of The Deuce? I think I liked it, but it might be my favoritism towards David Simon, James Franco, and especially Maggie Gyllenhaal. Mark, we're almost up on a break here. Did you like The Deuce?
I do, but I sort of felt towards The Deuce the way you felt when you said that you didn't like spending time with those characters. I was not as impressed with The Deuce as others. You know, to each their own. That's not going to be one that I'm going to say, oh, that's a bad choice. You know, but I would go back very quickly to Glow real fast to say, you know, I was a TV critic when the first Glow came on, and it was a terrible show. And they have made a great show out of what was a terrible show with that. And that could very easily have been on my top 10 list.
Oh, very interesting. Again, that's Mark Dowidziak, and he's a TV critic for The Plain Dealer. Also with us, Willa Paskin. She's television critic for Slate, host of the Decoder Ring podcast. We're talking about TV on the radio. And you can join our conversation. Any programs to recommend that you saw this year? 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscone. We are talking about some of the good TV shows of 2018. And our guest, Willa Paskin, mentioned Killing Eve. Sandra Oh plays Eve Pilastri. She's a, investigator for MI5, and she's trying to hunt down an assassin named Villanelle, and she's played by Jodie Comer. And here's a scene where she's Jodie Comer is getting a psychological evaluation.
There are concerns about your state of mind.
Okay.
Have you been feeling any anxieties or stress recently?
I had quite a heavy period last week, but other than that, I think I'm okay.
When was the last time you worked?
Yesterday.
Was it a successful mission?
Yes. I shot him twice in the heart and watched the spark drain from his eyes.
Did you talk to him?
A little. He said he had children and offered me money.
What did you feel when he said those things?
Impatient.
That's a great scene. You want to weigh in on that, Willa?
Jodie Comer is so good in that show. It's really I always wonder if it's like a rude thing for a TV critic to say someone should be like a movie star, but she should be a movie star. Someone should cast her in a romantic comedy. She's British, and she is so funny. And I mean, you can't tell she's British in that clip because she's not on the show. She plays not a Russian woman in the show. Killing Eve is up to a lot of really different things, but it's very like clever and light and funny. And I think part of that is about this main character, Villanelle, who is this real... she's a contract killer, a heartless, very good person, very good at killing people, terrible person, who murders people all the time. But part of what the show is about is basically because she's this very beautiful and sort of wacky young woman, everybody underestimates her. Like, no one really sees her for what she is. And that includes, I think, us and the audience a little bit. So we're sort of like, are we watching a fun show about... Like, this isn't a gritty, horrible serial killer show. And it sort of plays with those was sort of how a character like that affects everybody, including us. And so it basically gets to sort of have its cake and eat it, too, which is and to say it gets to be about all these grim things and still be really fun to watch.
And Sandra Oh is the Eve of Killing Eve.
Yeah, she's the woman who sort of the law enforcement official who is like immediate sort of figures out who she is, and they have a kind of sort of strange and flirtatious, connection where they're sort of tracing each other around Europe.
Oh, sounds interesting. Let me play one on your list, Mark, and this is Patrick Melrose. Benedict Cumberbatch is the character here. He's struggling with addiction, including, I guess, a heroin addiction. And here's a scene. He's gorging himself on food and alcohol in a restaurant and battling the voices in his own head. So the voices you're going to hear are both from Benedict Cumberbatch, but one is kind of inner self and one is outer self.
Most people withdrawing from heroin, high on speed, cultured by quaaludes and jet lag, might balk at the idea of food. But not I. I eat not from greed, but from passion.
Do shut up, will you?
Not you. Someone else.
Would sir care for a dessert?
Care for it? How do you care for a dessert? Feed it? Visit it on Sundays?
I'll have a creme brulee and a Mount de Bourgogne.
But it's still not heroin, is it? Heroin's the cavalry, the missing chair leg. Heroin is love. Simply call 555-1726.
Shut up!
Can you deconstruct that for us, Mark?
Well, if you got the idea that there was not only addiction there, but there were reasons for the addiction, that was one of the reasons to watch Patrick Melrose. The amazing thing is that this is based on three semi-autobiographical novels by Edward St. Albans. And you just have to wonder what kind of life he must have lived, because the parents in this are maybe the worst parents ever presented on television, and that's saying something. That is really going so. Benedict Cumberbatch, this was a very he hit so many levels in his performance for this, which not surprising because it's Benedict Cumberbatch. But it's a very richly funny show, but it's also a show deeply rooted in the pain and the origins of the addictions, and just an amazing performance.
Well, Willa, keeping this theme going, you did not like, as I understand it, Patrick Melrose.
Well, I didn't hate Patrick Melrose. I just didn't think it was... I thought this year in TV there was a huge amount of fine television, a bunch of very professionally made, perfectly competent television, of which Patrick Melrose is like a totally great example. Like, you could watch Patrick Melrose, have a good time. It's smart. It had some good performances. One of the difficulties with Patrick Melrose, it's a number of very high-profile adaptations of very famous – not very famous, but very great recent books. The Edward St. Aubin wrote the sort of Patrick Melrose series. This is like My Brilliant Friend, which is the adaptation of the Elena Ferrante novels. If you've read those books before you've seen the show, I think it's very hard for the show to come to sort of surpass or even to match what your vision, like what your experience with the books is. And that was sort of one of my problems with Patrick Melrose. But I mean, I just, you know, there is so much television. And for a very long time, I was very allergic to the idea that like there had been some falling off in quality. And I think the people that make TV really don't want you to think that there would be any effect on quality if there's, you know, 400 shows a year. And literally 5 years ago, there was like 150 or something. But of course, that isn't the case. Like, you know, people have to make these things and they're being made so quickly and by people who are not as experienced. And so on the one hand, it's amazing how good everything is, given that everything is basically very competent and professional. But I think you're seeing less things that are actually really great because you can't, you know, those things are as rare as ever. And there's just more of the stuff in the middle.
Oh, that's really interesting perspective here. Let me get to Stephen from Trenton to join our conversation. And Stephen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. I
just tuned in and I was like, oh my God, they're talking about the U show. I would like to put my two cents in and suggesting a show. It's called You're the Worst. It's on FXX. It's coming up on its final season next month. I was absolutely floored by the acting in this show. It's about two very self-destructive people who find themselves pretty much in love with each other, but they don't want to admit it. But it's pretty much it's a love story of our generation, and but it also touches up on mental illness, and I think it has a pretty accurate depiction of it. But it also ties in a really dark comedy to it, which makes it an all around like well rounded show. I definitely give it a 10 on my
ten list. You're the worst, Mark. Let me toss it to Mark and just see whether he saw it and what you make of that. Mark, go ahead.
Actually, this was one I did not see when it first started. It was one my students recommended. I always ask my students what they're. If you're any kind of teacher at all, you learn from your students. And the first thing I'm always amazed, by the way, is that they all watch something different. There is never an overlap on what show they're watching or binge watching, and that's always fascinating. But this was one of my students recommended, so I caught up with it, and was pleasantly surprised that. I had a wrong impression of it, but one of the things was the depiction of addiction that I thought was very strong. It would not make my top 10 list. In all honesty, what Willa was saying about this is a fine show, but it would not make my top 10 list. But there's a lot of competition for that, obviously.
Stephen, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to tell us about some of the TV shows that you enjoyed this year. Will, I'm going to go back to you, to the little drummer girl from BBC. This is a scene Michael Shannon plays an Israeli spy. He works for the Mossad trying to convince an actress named Charlie, played by Florence Pugh, to be part of a scheme to infiltrate a Palestinian terrorist cell.
I've been kidnapped by an experimental theater company.
Experimental, certainly. Your audience, they won't even know they're watching. But they will be grateful. Kids, their parents, innocent bystanders who get a piece of shrapnel in their throat when a bomb goes off right beside them, were it not for you. Should you want to go home, of course, back to your pub theaters, your lonely brilliance, no one is stopping you. But if you are at all intrigued by this role, we need to ask you a final round of questions tonight.
What's the character?
A terrorist.
Will, you want to add to that?
Sure. So I think making top 10 lists is always a little bit, it's a little bit of a performance. So
sure.
I liked the show a lot. I don't know that I think it's like, if you were to come to me and say, I thought that show was like hard to follow and kind of trashy, I'd be like, I know, that's what I liked about it. But I think it has those things, elements to it. So it's in addition to sort of being a, as you could tell from that, this sort of espionage thriller. The thing that I really loved about it is it has this sort of like kinky, flirtatious love or not love spy dynamic at his heart, which is the Florence Pugh, is the young woman who's just talking in that scene, is sort of taken in by the Mossad and trained to be a sort of spy to pose as a terrorist. And she's sort of trained by a Mossad agent played by Alexander Sarsgaard. And they sort of have to pretend. It's very complicated, but they basically have to pretend to be in love. And it's very I like that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm into that.
Sounds
so
good.
That
to
sort
me.
Of was what I was like. That's what I was into My Little Drummer Girl about. Although there's lots of other elements to it that are, you know, darker and more complicated and more have to do with more geopolitical questions.
Let me read some more comments from our listeners. Joan says, I've really been enjoying shows from Australia, Sisters, Offspring, and Red Fern Now. A comment from Ryan. The Kaminsky Method was well done. A comment from Anne. Low-key British comedy The Day, third and final season, was the best yet. A comment from Anne Marie. What did your guests think of Goliath? I love the first season, but found the second season unwatchable. Mark, did you watch Goliath?
Yeah, I don't know that it was unwatchable. I think that's a little strong. But no, I didn't think it was as strong as second season. But I didn't think the first season was that strong either, by the way. I mean, I thought the performances helped carry a lot of what was very uneven writing in the first season. And then I think they stumbled a bit in the second season.
What do you think about some of these true crime series? We don't have time to play, and it's too complicated, frankly, to talk about The Staircase. But programs like that, Willa, what did you make of Making of a Murderer? There were some other ones as well. What do you make of that?
I mean, I think I actually haven't seen the second season of Making a Murderer because there's too much television, as you have probably become aware or might have heard. But I think that, you know, the true crime stuff is really interesting because there's obviously a huge amount of it and there's a huge audience for it. I think there's sort of an increasing awareness by critics and by the people who make it and even from audience members that there's something kind of perverse about it, like that the way that these things that are the fact that it's real makes it so much more interesting and powerful and gripping, but then the way that it's actually real and then we turn it into a story for our entertainment is actually sort of twisted and complicated and maybe unseemly. And so with something like Making a Murderer, which, you know, when it came out, the first season came out and was such a phenomenon, it seemed like, you know, everyone was watching it, one of the few shows that sort of achieved peak TV escape velocity, like where everyone's really interested in it. And then afterwards, in sort of the weeks after, there was much more sort of, you know, journalism about whether or not the show itself had been totally honest about the information that it had presented and that it was actually a more complicated story than it seemed to be in the show about, you know, guilt and innocence. So I think that some of that complication actually is part of what made the second season seem less of a phenomenon or less to watch. It just became obviously a more complicated and gnarly situation, as really probably most true crime cases are. The true crime thing is true crime never goes out of style, but it's particularly in style right now. And you see it, I think, not just on television, but podcasts. I mean, there's so many true crime podcasts.
Like
even more than on television. So, you really don't need to watch TV for it very much anymore. And it's sort of also, I suspect there's like a little bit of a competition. I mean, it's sort of as part of what's gross, sort of grotesque about it, but like a kind of true crime land grab where like everyone's just trying to find the stories that they can make something about, you know, and there's dozens of players trying to find that story.
I want to sorry about that. I want us to squeeze one more clip in, and Mark, this is from your list. Bill Hader plays a hitman in the show Barry on HBO. While on the job, he's participating in an acting class led by Gene Cousineau, played by Henry Winkler. In this scene, Barry is asking Gene after the class to see if he has potential as an actor and confesses that he's a contract killer.
You go back to whatever nook of the world you call home, and you do whatever it is you're good at. Because this is not it.
You want to know what I'm good at? I'm good at killing people. Yeah, when I got back from Afghanistan, I was really depressed. You know, like I didn't leave my house for months. And this friend of my dad's, he's like an uncle to me. He helped me out, and he gave me a purpose. He told me that what I was good at over there could be useful here. And it's a job, you know? The money's good. And these people I take out, like, they're bad people. You know, like, they're pieces of shit. But lately, you know, I'm not sleeping. And that depressed feeling's back, you know? Like, I know there's more to me than that. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe this is all I'm good at. I don't know.
And we're going to leave it there. That's a scene from Barry. Mark Dawidziak, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Okay, well, thank you. And I just want to keep the record straight. That wasn't on my top 10 list.
Oh, it wasn't. Oh, it was on my top 10 list.
But it made my honorable mention list along with Glow and Atlanta. So when Willa said we don't agree on some things, there is actually a big area of agreement.
Well, we're going to end on that note. Mark Dawidziak, thanks for joining us. Willa Paskin, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thanks for joining us.